Welcome your windpipe. Touch my children, and my teeth welcome your windpipe. Utter the name and be crushed by leg, growing strong from holding up weight. By thigh that carries rocks. An urgent gait. I will hunch my shoulders and wait. Claws sharpened, teeth agape.
You're tuned into 101.9 FM. This is Unseated Airwaves, and I'm Cleo Skivinsky. Penisakai Goetze Dene Aati. I am a Decho Dene descendant of Penisakai. I am from Treaty 11 and 8 territory. I am also a student of Sociology and Critical Indigenous Studies here at UBC, and I have been for the past 4 years. That means that I've been living on stolen land for 4 years. I've been living, working, and studying here. And it's my responsibility as a guest to intervene in harmful discourses and to care for this land as if it were my own. Today on Unseated Airwaves, we are talking about education, both cultural and institutional. And to do so, I thought it would be wonderful to invite my own mother, Serena Skivinsky, on the air. My mom is my role model. She was a single parent that went to university while I was growing up. She inspires me to stand up for what I believe in and step in when I witness unjust treatment of others. I would not be where I am today, recording this episode, without my mother. I have a quote from my mom tattooed on my right forearm that says, "Each moment passes, it never stays the same." This saying reminds me that the pain and discomfort is temporary, and life goes on even after the most devastating of experiences. This quote comes to mind in the voice of my mom from my childhood, full of comfort and reassurance. As I have lived my life, it takes on a new and different significance in each situation I come across. Because each moment will pass, what you do next is what matters. My mom will be joining me by Zoom from my hometown in Hay River, Northwest Territories. Please be patient with some of the audio for this episode. The internet in the north is notoriously slow, and we did our very best to minimize any mishaps. Before I get into the interview today on this episode, I will be having a short ad break. along with a song by Buffy St. Marie.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial. Open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
Welcome back. You are tuned into Unseated Airwaves on 101.9 FM. I'm Cleo Skibinski, and I'm joined today by Serena Skibinski.
Hi, Mom. It's nice to see you over Zoom. It took us a hot minute to get on, but here we are. How are you doing today?
I'm doing spectacular. How are you doing?
Oh, today I'm doing pretty good. I have been very productive lately, and I'm quite happy to be on Zoom with you today, Mom. Would you mind introducing yourself to listeners, including your name and whatever else feels right to you in this moment?
My name is Serena Danielle Skivinsky. I live north of 60. I have a 21-year-old daughter. She's my favorite human being. I am a corrections officer and have been for the last 8 years. I got a puppy and I named a Shadow. Because my daughter's in university getting a grade A education. And I like to go hunting and fishing. And those are my favorite hobbies.
Amazing. Thank you. Yeah, I think that paints a nice picture of who you are. But honestly, words will not be able to describe who Serena Skibinski is. She's a powerhouse. She is a matriarch of all meanings and intentions, as well as one kick-ass grantee. That is grandmother and auntie hyphenated into one powerful position. So today on Unseen Airwaves, I've invited my mom because she is also a UBC alumni and I'm a current UBC student. And I like to look at and talk about the differences in our experiences as Indigenous students at UBC at different points in time. So Serena, when did you go to UBC and what were you studying?
I went to UBC in 2008. I transferred from GPRC in Alberta. And I took business management. I have a BBM, a Bachelor of Business Management. Yeah, it was quite an adventure. Cleo was in grade two. yeah, at the time then, yeah, single mom, ripping up and down the country from Hay River NWT to Kelowna. And yeah. It was a good experience, stressful, but life as it is, there's stressful moments, there's stressful times. It's how you deal with it, and stress builds character.
So thinking back before university, what was your high school experience like in terms of classes and extracurriculars?
High school was... the bell ringing, you had 5 minutes to get to your next class. Never had enough time to get to your locker. I can't believe I remember this. And yeah, extracurricular activities was a lot of basketball, volleyball, track, coaching. Worked a lot of bingos, actually, to do our extracurricular activities, traveling activities with parents. That was pretty wild because you don't see that nowadays, because back in the day, in the 90s, they were all smoking in those bingo halls. So I remember always coming home smelling like a chimney. So I don't know how. Yeah. And yeah, extracurricular activities. And you know what? For all those activities, I still know people to this day that I go to other communities that I see and run into that I've met, played against, and it's kind of amazing because we've all grown up, had families, professional careers. Yeah, I guess that's how we socially integrated with each other, because we didn't have cell phones and things like that in high school. Wow, I didn't have that in high school. I had my little rotary phone, then it went to portable phones. I still remember my phone number. 250-774-6736 was my home phone number growing up. Yeah. That's about sums up high school. Still have relationships with the teachers I had through high school. That's pretty cool. That's an amazing thing. Yeah, lots of networking, I guess. Old school.
So we're Dene Ukrainian. Your father was Ukrainian, your mom's Dene. Where did you go to learn about those kind of things? Like, where'd you go to learn about Ukrainian people or to learn about like Dene people and like the language? Were there any resources like that for you growing up?
My mother. Mm-hmm. My mother and my grandmother Skivinsky over east in Thunder Bay, Ontario. I got cross stitching every year. And I got beadwork every year. Dene, and she instilled in me the Ukrainian, just cross stitch. I'm not that great. Cleo, I think, is better. And dipping eggs. Like, dipping eggs is something that's just a custom to me. So I grew up with moose meat and pierogies and bannock. That was my diet. But yes. My mother taught me about culture from both sides of my family, from my father's side to my mother's side. Hence the last name Skivinsky. Culture was very important.
Culture and knowing your family heritage is very important. I'm really curious, though.
Yes, I actually, my mother gave me, when I turned 21, a little address book. And it has all of my European descendants in it. And it goes back from my grandma Skivinsky all the way down, I think, 7 generations, maybe 8. So I can find lineage. And it's just this little address book that my grandma Skivinsky made for my mother. Can't find that on the internet.
Definitely not. Growing up for you, was there any like school curriculum on Indian residential schools or other Indigenous topics?
Are you kidding me? That's a hush, hush. No.
Never?
That was a hush, hush. So for me to watch this go on, what's going on now, and it's centerfold stage for my mother and her generation, more so because they're the last surviving generation, it's pretty wild to see it evolve. It's pretty wild to watch it all literally evolve. And for my mother to sit there and say to me, I could have never done what she's doing at her age. And she's talking about you, Cleo, at 21. At 21, it was pretty hard for grandma. Yeah.
Like, was there the other side of your identity, like in high school or anything? Did you ever learn about the Ukrainian internment camps that followed after World War II? During?
Yes, I actually remember learning in grade 10 socials. And I asked Mr. McKenzie and I said, why do we have to learn this? And he told me, this is about relations too, it's going to end up going into. And he said to me, because as humans, we need to learn from our mistakes so we don't do it again. And not so long ago, Kosovo happened. And that was brutal. And I kid you not, I ran into Mr. McKenzie. I was like, in my early 20s, I was just 19, just turned 19. And I ran into him and I said, Mr. McKenzie, I thought as humans, we were supposed to learn from our mistakes. Look what's happening in Kosovo when they killed like 150,000 Ukrainians. Nobody learned from their mistakes. Their mistakes happen all the time. They're happening today. It's horrible. So that's how I learned of heritage and things and such in my Ukrainian side. No, I never learned as much in high school.
How about in university? So you pursued a BBM, a Bachelor's of Business Management. Was there ever any Indigenous topics in your post-secondary education?
Yeah, because I chose them.
So when you chose them, how would you?
I took Native Studies, Aboriginal Anthropology. That one was very interesting. I took that one in GPRC, actually. That was pretty cool. That's about all. I sought to find those classes. It wasn't actually advertised or put out there.
Do you feel like you were ever treated differently in classrooms because you were Indigenous? Whether that be like in a good or a bad way?
Yes. I had some pretty old school professors. And I was smart for how I was raised, where I was raised. I understood what was going on. And that was fine by that, whatever. Most of the times when I had to go to my classes that were the late classes, I was actually working or doing things. So, you know, I'm a little scruffy. It's not like I was sharp like a pencil. It was only classes. But the interesting part that gets, I'm a fisher and I'm a hunter. So now it comes along, and this is literally like my first year of school and my university degree. And there's a little poster and it says, fly fishing. So I'm like, man, I know how to fly fish, got fly fishing kit. I got a maker. I know. Yeah. So I get one of my fellow students there, Silvana, to watch Cleo. And I go to this meeting Wednesday. It was before Thanksgiving. I go to this meeting, fly fishers meeting, and it's all of my old school professors. And I'm like, I didn't care. They like to fly fish. I'm going to learn some things. I had some tricks, some trades, some. Yeah, it turned out to be a pretty amazing thing. So 2 days later, I have class again. I have Mr. Nutting. And let me tell you, man, night and day. All 65 people sitting in that classroom knew that there's something different. It was pretty wild to watch that go down. Mr. Nutting, yeah, he was... I changed people's opinions pretty quick, man, in that little fly fishing scenario. Mm-hmm. Because I still have relations with some of those professors. And I still get invited to alumni things like golf and stuff. Do I go? Maybe not now, but... Just kidding.
We are going to take a quick ad break. We'll be back shortly.
Can you hear that? The SOS to the world from the people of Ukraine. And you've never wanted to help more. Yet you've never felt more helpless. Here's what you can do. Give to the Ukraine Humanitarian Crisis Appeal. The Red Cross is on the ground to make sure your donation supplies food, water, shelter, and other urgent support. Show everyone affected by the Ukraine conflict that you hear them, loud and clear. Go to redcross.ca.
Join us every other Wednesday from 6:30 to 8 p.m. for Sam Squanch's Hideaway with your host, Anita B., as she plays all Canadian music with a focus on indie rock and pop.
The mineral, the iron, the copper, the coltan, the rubber, the coffee, the cotton, the sugar, the people, the people, the people. The germ traveled faster than the bullet. They harvest the mountainside, protect the crops, herd the cattle. The people, the people, the people, the people, the people. The women and children were separated from the men. They are divided us according to the regional filters of their minds. The violence of arrogance crawls into the air, nestles into the geospatial cortex. We are not a conquered people. Never hid their perspective. Perspectives of land would rather see us disappear. Recyclable prayers. The people, the people, the people, the people. This is my body, which is given for you. The people, the people. This is my blood. The people, the people. We are not a conquered people. I was raised by my elder brother. The compound was on fire.
Welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM. This is Unseated Airwaves. You are halfway through the episode, and this is Cleo Skivinsky joined by Serena Skivinsky.
When you were a student at UBC, were there any spaces or resources that were available to you because you were Indigenous?
No. No. I don't ever recall, actually. I didn't seek it out for things, and but I knew, on that UBC campus downtown Kelowna, there wasn't. And if there was, I never saw any publicizing of it or posters and things, because, I'm a poster reader.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just wait. There was some little place to go, because I had to fight for a grade. But it was like smaller than our back room, Cleo, and there was two offices. And it was like the side, like they cleaned out a closet to make it or something. It was kind of wild, but I went in there. Yes, I had to go fight for a grade. And that's the avenue I took. But there wasn't a sitting room and things and stuff like what you got going on down there. What's it called?
We have the longhouse. We also have the Indigenous committee room in the nest. So the committee room is where I go to study a lot of the time during the daytime, with the couches and with the study space.
Holy shit, we had a burrow.
A hole in the wall.
We didn't have no nest. Sorry, but that's like kind of funny.
It is pretty.
Oh, times have changed, eh?
Times really have changed, considering that now, like, I sit here, just over 12 years later, and I guess like 14 now, it's 2022. And that I have the longhouse, there's the Indigenous committee room, there's also the Indigenous collegium, there's also the different faculty-based Indigenous advisors. Like, I have my Aboriginal Arts Advising office that I go to for my issues and my grade problems and things like you, where I need to fight for a grade, I go to them. But there's definitely more than just two offices, and there's definitely a couch to sit on and wait to have your meetings. Were there any spaces or resources outside of UBC that you accessed?
Yes, I did. I like the Friendship Center. Center is so good. They're awesome. Got invited to a few powwows and
See, I know that you were on an Indigenous women's baseball team when we lived down in Kelowna.
Oh, fastball, honey. Fastball.
So how did that happen?
Oh. Well, good buddy Carrie there lives down in Kelowna, and she'd already lived there for quite a few years before I went to school there. Maybe a decade. Sorry, Carrie. And she knew I played ball, and I was studying. I think I was in the end of my third year. And Carrie's like, you know what, Serena, you said you wanted to get busy. You wanted to do something. There's a team you can go play ball with, and they're playing tonight, and they need another girl. And it's an all Aboriginal women's team. And I was like, oh, yeah. She said ball. She didn't say fast. She didn't say slow pitch. She didn't say. So I show up, and I do have an exam the next day. I had an economics exam. So I had this really big thick book with me. So I go walking on up. Oh yeah, I got cleats. I got my ball glove and stuff. And I go walking into the bullpen, and they all look at me, throw this on, and they threw a jersey at me. And I was like, what? Yeah, we're playing them. I was like, what? I was like, okay. Threw this jersey on. Oh man, it was quite a ride. I was like, okay, what do you play first? Oh, that's good. That's who we're missing. I'm like, our first baseman. You any good? I can be. It was kind of funny. I didn't know how to answer it. And these were all beautiful Aboriginal women and things. And I'm like, hola. Like, I'm like the rookie. So they stick me out in first. Oh yeah, man, I got a fast mitt. I can catch anything that flies at me, anything. I stand by that. So anyways, I'm out there. So now it comes up to us to bat. I'm like, holy shit, this is fastball. Like, It just clicks into me because I'm thinking I'm studying for this exam in between like catching and ending like, oh, so anyways, now I actually hit on the batting list and I got to go out there and I'm like, and they're all laughing. Okay. And we played against this girls team and they were wearing kilts. They're wearing tiny little kilts, mini skirts, playing fastball. I was like, what the hell? Ours were cool, man. They were black and purple with some silver in it. So anyways, she throws and she throws. I strike. So coach comes in. When it leaves her hand, pretend to swing, then swing. And I was like, what? It's like, when it leaves her hand, pretend to swing, then swing. I listened to exactly what this strange man said to me. And I cracked it out there. I got to third base, man. Oh. You want to hear that? It was so awesome. It was kind of wild. Make it back in. Oh, one of them slapped the back of my helmet and said, hey, short round, because they were all really tall and stuff. So now I'm sitting out because someone's going to go out and catch for a bit or whatever. They're filling, but they wanted someone. Anyways. So I'm sitting on the bench and I'm studying. And then one of the girls is sitting here, you know, we're like nurses and doctors and lawyers, eh? I was like, huh? She's like, yeah, we're all nurses and doctors and lawyers and nurses and a psychologist. And I was like, for real? She goes, yeah, we've all sat in this pit and read those books. And I was quite impressed. So yeah, I played with them all over. I went to Vancouver with them. We played some tournaments and stuff, but yeah, I got into it just because my hometown girl, Carrie, from Fort Nelson, BC, told me, hey, they need a player. And I stuck to them. They took me everywhere. They were fun. And so educated.
Mm-hmm.
And mommies and aunties and grandmas. And yeah, and they were very welcoming. It was awesome. That's how that happened, everybody.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty awesome space to be in, especially like surrounded by a bunch of strong Indigenous women, especially if like you're working and learning in a space that's not entirely welcoming, like UBC. Sometimes like it feels good to have an actual space you can go to and you can actually unwind and joke and feel like people understand you, because not only were they Indigenous women, they're also Indigenous women that have gone through what you were going through, like academia and like institutionalization. That's really impressive. I didn't know that they were all a bit older than you and like already set in their career paths like that.
Oh yeah. And it was the really important, like their family would fill up a whole stand, Cleo, with all of them, like all their family and stuff would fill up a whole stand. It was wild. It was amazing to watch and be a part of. And we won a spot to get to go to Vancouver. I think we played like nationals. Oh, that's when you came home for the summer with grandma. And when we won that spot to go in nationals, Cleo, that was the first time in my life I got thrown on people's shoulders. They threw me up. We went three for three. I just kept on catching, man. It was pretty wild. I thought they were going to drop me, but they didn't.
That's pretty wicked. Yes, you're an alumni of both GPRC and UBC. You're also a parent of a student. Do you have any thoughts about the changes you've seen at UBC and other places of academia?
I see now that they're pulling more to accepting and making it politically acceptable to be Aboriginal, to see those rights. There's rights out there that they bury and they try to hide. But I still see same things. I still see it's still the same. It's like a double-edged sword, actually.
How so?
It's the people that'll make a change, not the process, not the institute, not the government. It's the people that'll make the change. So I guess we just got to make them more aware that we're all human and we all breathe the same air and we all stand under the same sun.
Word. When people ask you what I'm studying in school, what do you tell people?
Quite honestly, Cleo, I kind of don't know the direct answer. So I kind of, I just say you're going to get a doctorate in psychology and sociology. You're going to be Dr. Skidinski. And that you are going to work with children because they are going to be easier to help and mold becoming the adults than the adults that have already become what they have become. So that's kind of like what I say. What would you like me to say?
I think actually that
is that kind of the gist of it, or
that's like the long-term goals of it. Yeah. I think you have a lot of the essentials that I am focusing on, things that I'm passionate about. I think you're pretty on the nail. What I tell people that I'm studying is that I'm studying sociology, which is the study of human society and the way that culture embodies itself in our actions and our behaviors. And I minor and I focus on critical Indigenous studies. So a lot of the work that I do is not only working to decolonize my own internal narratives, but to also be able to view other documents and other experiences through a decolonial lens. And essentially that means that I am learning to use theories that people have written over the years and through however long Western academia has been around, and I can change them in such a way that actually applies to working with community, not only with children, who are, I will admit, also easier to interrupt the succession of learning very harmful colonial concepts, and to, they're already open-minded enough to be like, this doesn't make sense. Why does this happen? A big goal of mine is to one day be able to speak my language, speak our language, Dene'iti, so that I can eventually communicate with people in my community, such as elders, in their first tongue. Because those ideas and those concepts, I believe, will come across to them a lot better that way. And so my degree eventually, I hope, will lead me to getting a doctorate of sociology, in which I will focus a lot of my studies on Indigenous folks and Northern communities, because that's where I feel the most passionate and the most attuned to. And I see a lot of the things that some people have deemed bad and some people have deemed not being healthy for communities as being instead these unhealthy behaviors are coping mechanisms that have been created in response to some of the colonial lies that we're steeped in. And a lot of my thinking does come from watching you go to school and watching you work and like watching you persevere through those experiences and how much you were able to adapt to a space such as a business degree in order to get through those years to get to a degree in business management. You adapted yourself, but you didn't lose the way you were able to speak to grandma. You didn't lose the way you could speak to people around you. You utilized it. And that's something I'm trying to mimic in my degree, where I can learn all my big jargony words of sociological theories, but I can make it understandable. I don't lose the way I speak to people around me. Instead, I take what I learn at school and I make it accessible to those that want only the stuff that makes sense to them. So I'll go through the years to learn the way it's structured here to make it make sense to everyone else.
That's right, Dr. Skivinsky.
A little long-winded, but like a lot of what I learned, a lot of the ideas that I have come from being around and being raised by a single mom when I was going through university, because I already saw what was coming and I knew the pressures and I understood that this space was not created for me. But people like my mom that went through university already had pointed that out, that there are responses, that there's new resources and spaces for people like me so that I can be as successful as I want and desire to be. And I think it's really important Yes. that like my role as an Indigenous student now, especially as an Indigenous student that takes on leadership roles, is that I make it so the next generation of Indigenous students coming in don't have to go through the same things that I'm going through at the time of like reconciliation and really big conversations entering classrooms that they never were before. where there's a lot of folks that are realizing they don't know anything, or all that they know are the lies and the simple narratives spoon-fed to us through whatever means. That eventually I hope that no Indigenous student ever sits in a classroom and someone looks at them saying, "So, we're talking about Indian residential schools today. Do you have any thoughts?" And just because I'm Indigenous doesn't mean that I owe anyone a moment of my time to teach them things that they should already know, things that they can Google, things that they can go to class and learn, so someone that's being paid to teach them.
Yes. I love you.
I love you too. Do you have any last thoughts to share with listeners today?
Any last thoughts?
Any last thoughts?
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for all you listeners out there. Thank you for all you single parents out there. You keep it real and you keep going forward. You don't look back. And when you do, it's because you're waving at your kid. To have a good day. And yeah.
Masicho.
What was the question?
Just any last thoughts to listeners? I think you answered it perfectly. Musi Cho, thank you, Mom. I really appreciate
you. I'm just being, you know.
This has been a fantastic time.
This is awesome. I enjoy the show. Join the show. Listen to the show. It's interesting. It's great. It's fabulous. Probably going to listen to this show even after Cleo's done on the show. I'm probably going to be a fan now. I am a fan. I'm the biggest fan. Woo! 2023, look out, yo. It's gonna be lit. Y'all have a good day, you hear?
The Aboriginal Frontier Society is a culturally safe, peer-designed, non-judgmental place for Aboriginal peoples, their friends and their family in the downtown Eastside. It's an accessible space where Aboriginal folks can experience, learn, and participate in traditional Aboriginal culture, teachings, and ceremonies as part of their healing journey through life. Right now, they're accepting donations of food and warm clothing, which are needed more than ever as residents of the downtown Eastside face the challenges of COVID-19 and winter weather. If you're able to help, you can drop your donation off at 384 Main Street on weekdays between 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. That is 384 Main Street. To learn more about the Aboriginal Front Door Society and other ways that you can support their work, please visit abfrontdoor.org.
Unceded Airwaves is hosted and broadcasted from the traditional lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. My mother, Serena Skivinsky, joined me today from Treaty 8 and 11 Territory. We spoke about her experiences in education as a Dene Ukrainian woman. Some of the stories that she had shared today, I previously hadn't heard before, so it was definitely a treat for myself to be able to share them on this episode. The pride that I feel to be able to share this conversation on Unceded Airwaves, as well as all the conversations thus far and to come, is incredible. When was the last time you called home and called your family? I know life gets hectic and it can be frustrating to find the time, but when you get the chance, it's a good idea. I find it grounding to speak to my mother and my grandmother on the phone. Or you can try teaching your parents how to use Zoom. It's actually pretty funny when I think about the near 2 years I spent logged into Zoom University that the interview with my mom today was the first time she had ever really been on the video call service. There was one day I'd been on a Zoom class in 2020 in my hometown, and my mom laughed at the tiny little videos of all my classmates. She said it reminded her of the Muppets intro sequence, when they all pop out of the little windows and sing. It has been a joy to host this episode and to share the conversations that we had. Musi cho to all my listeners for tuning into this episode. If you have an idea for a future episode, music to feature, or would like to join me on air, hit me up at the Indigenous Collective through the email indigenouscollective@citr.ca. I also host weekly meetings on Tuesdays 2 to 3 p.m. in the CITR station, located in the lower atrium of the AMS Nest on UBC campus. If you're interested in getting acquainted with the CITR station, tours are held at noon each weekday. This is a great way to introduce yourself and meet some amazing folks here that make CITR and Discorder possible. Until next time, Musi cho, and have a wonderful day. Thank you.